This is our number.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Yesterday, the big story of the day was Beto. Today, it's Veto. No, I know it's Beto. But Donald Trump, moments ago, signed his first ever veto. So just to give you a little bit of the background, the president a couple of weeks ago declared a national emergency to fund the wall. He says that things are critical on our U.S.-Mexico border, drugs, human trafficking, streaming across an unchecked border. And so President Trump today, after the Senate, 59-41, so it wasn't veto-proof, the Senate said, we do not support the president's emergency declaration. And so Donald Trump is vetoing that Senate vote where a few Republicans crossed the aisle, joined the Democrats against this. He did start his remarks moments ago in the Oval Office talking about that horrible mosque attack in, or two mosques attacked in New Zealand yesterday.
Earlier today, I spoke with Prime Minister Ardern of New Zealand to express the sorrow of our entire nation following the monstrous terror attacks at two mosques. These sacred places of worship were turned into scenes of evil killing. You've all been seeing what went on. It's a horrible, horrible thing. I told the Prime Minister that the United States is with them all the way, 100%, whatever they need, we will be there. New Zealand has been a great friend and partner for many years. Our relationship has never been better. And what they're going through is absolutely terrible. So our hearts are with them and whatever we can do.
Yes, and it's such a horribly tragic story. 49 people slaughtered at their place of worship yesterday in New Zealand, or early today, actually, in New Zealand. And it was live streamed, and now all the social media, they're trying to scrub because the people who were able to capture the live stream that these murderous fiends, they wanted to broadcast it to the world. And so now that's being scrubbed from social media, as it should be. Their names should not be said. Their manifesto should not be shared. We have to stop making celebrities out of these mass killers. So those were the president's first remarks in a show of solidarity with our Kiwi friends. And then on the veto of the Senate non-support of the emergency declaration for the wall.
As we take action to restore our national sovereignty and defend this nation from criminal cartels, human traffickers, and drug smugglers, crime of all kinds coming through our southern border and other places. But this is the place. This is the place we have the biggest problem by far.
And of course, Donald Trump, as a candidate, he ran on building the wall. He said that in his first ever speech. Now, of course, he has not been able to follow through on a lot of the empty, hollow promises he made about that when he said Mexico would pay for the wall. And Mexico absolutely will not participate in paying for the wall. So that has been a hole that he dug for himself. But unquestionably, more than any other issue, this is the one that he ran on. And he got elected president of the United States. And so it's reasonable to assume that the people who voted for Donald Trump, that they want the wall as well. Now, the polling all shows that Americans are really divided on the wall. But that's what he ran on. He's trying to follow through on that campaign promise. Again, even though we're paying for it, not Mexico, as he declared. A little bit more as the comments from the Oval Office are just being released to us.
And I have to in particular thank the Republican, strong, wonderful people, the Republican senators that were on our side and on the side of border security and on the side of doing what they have to keep our nation safe. They were very courageous yesterday, and I appreciate that very much. Congress's vote to deny the crisis on the southern border is a vote against reality. It's against reality. It is a tremendous national emergency. It is a tremendous crisis. Last month, more than 76,000 illegal migrants arrived at our border. We're on track for 1 million illegal aliens to rush our borders. People hate the word invasion, but that's what it is. It's an invasion of drugs and criminals and people. We have no idea who they are, but we capture them because border security is so good. But they're put in a very bad position, and we're bursting at the seams, literally bursting at the seams. What Border Patrol's able to do is incredible. I also, by the way, want to thank our military, because our military has been very much involved, as you know. And they're putting up walls, in some cases temporary. In some cases, they were supposed to be temporary. They're so good that they're better than the permanent, so we're leaving them. We've really nowhere left to hold all of the people that we're capturing.
Okay, what the president's talking about, of course, is that there is a protocol that must be followed if people try to sneak into this country. And when they're captured, they are put in these detention centers. A little bit more from the president as he is trying to make the case for his veto.
We've really nowhere left to hold all of the people that we're capturing. And we're at a point where we're just going to have to say, with these horrible decisions that we've been handed by people that aren't living in reality, that there's nothing we can do. There's absolutely nothing we can do. We're bursting at the seams. You can only do so much. And the only option then is to release them. But we can't do that either, because when you release them, they come into our society. And in many cases, they're stone-cold criminals. And in many cases, and in some cases, you have killers coming in and murderers coming in, and we're not going to allow that to happen. Just not going to allow it to happen. There has been nearly 2,000% increase in border-related asylum claims over the last decade. Part of the reason is because our country is doing so well economically that people are coming up in droves. The vast majority are rejected, but smuggling organizations making a tremendous amount of money, like they've never made before, are using these people to crash the system. Our immigration system is stretched beyond the breaking point.
And it is unquestionable that the coyotes, the people who smuggle people into this country, that they do make a lot of money. As I said before the top of the hour, one out of every three women and girls who is brought into this country is sexually assaulted on the way through Mexico to the United States. And that tragedy must come to an end. And so the first veto of the Donald Trump presidency is the Senate saying they did not support his national emergency declaration for the wall. And the president has made the case that he will veto it and still try to get $8 billion to build the wall. So that's the breaking news as we're just now getting this audio in from the Oval Office minutes ago. It's going to be an interesting fight. I do think that it is, when the president campaigned on this issue and Republicans wouldn't support him unanimously, there are some deep state Republicans who are in the pockets of big business, and big business wants the cheap labor that comes with illegals, and the beat goes on in the swamp. Next up in the Fastest 15... So the Boeing 737 MAX planes that have been grounded, we've been talking the last couple of days about, in my view, this is absolutely why we can never have pilotless planes, because there's been so much talk that they fly by computer anyway.
Yeah, so much is automated anymore.
Yeah. And I think you and I have a different perspective on driverless cars.
Yes.
I am a huge believer and proponent of the future of driverless cars. You would not be comfortable with that.
I would not. I would always want to have some control or be driving in a car where someone would have some control.
And a listener asked me, Dory, why are you against pilotless planes, but four driverless cars?
And I think that's a great question. Why?
I have a great answer. As we talked about, before these two Boeing crashes, in 2017, there was not one commercial air death in the world. In 2017, airplane travel is the safest that it's ever been. Cars, we are seeing, you know, 100,000 people a year die on our highways, and 50,000 of them are alcohol related. There's so much distracted driving. And my answer is quite simple. I think the airline industry is working fabulously well in regards to safety the way things are now, with pilots who can override a faulty computer. I think our drivers stink. We've got too many people on their, you know, texting and drinking. And if we have...
There's so much at stake when you're in... I mean, there's so much at stake, obviously, in a car or a bus or, but on a plane, I mean, that is a lot of lives to trust to a computer.
Right. Which is why I don't want to trust it to a computer. But in cars, have you ridden in a driverless car or the cars with that technology?
No.
A friend of mine has a Tesla, and they're really advanced in the driverless technology. And he put it on the auto drive, and we went from Arlington to North Seattle, and it's switched. I mean, he doesn't touch the wheel. He doesn't touch the gas or the brake.
How do you explain some of those accidents in which, you know, there have been people who have been killed by the driverless cars?
Earliest stage of the technology. The same way, I mean, you know how many deaths there were as we transitioned from horse and buggy to automobile? It was. I mean, early on, cars were unbelievably dangerous. And the fact that we have tens of thousands of people who are dying a year, and most of it is attributable to distracted and drunk driving, I am a believer in the coming technology that says we eliminate the human element from cars and our roads are going to get, I mean, accidents could be, 2% of what they are now. Insurance rates will plummet because there's not going to be that many accidents. I mean, and the insurance industry is acknowledging that.
I mean, think of how many decisions go into driving. Like, when you just make a simple trip from here to home, mm-hmm. you know, you might decide, okay, I want to go this way or I need to do this. You can't anticipate something else. And the other thing is, even if you're in a driverless car, there might be someone who's not in a driverless car.
Yeah. Well, I think that in 20 years, most cars will be driverless. I think they'll be electric, autonomous vehicles. And then I had that futurist. I mean, he's not really a futurist. He was an executive for GM and Ford and a bunch of major auto companies, and his vision, like on I-5 right now, the far left lane, these driverless electric cars, they will be like a train, and you can go as fast as you want. They inches apart. They could be going 100 miles an hour.
And that would scare me to death.
And the lane next to them would be the merge lane, either into the train or out of the train, and a gap will open up and you'll jump in the train line, and or you'll start to merge away from it so you can get to the exit. And our roads are going to be efficient. Oh, I want this tomorrow.
You said 10 years or 20 years?
I think in 10 years we will be solidly into the transition, and in 20 years I think we could be fully implemented.
So let's remember this conversation, and then when we're about to retire,
20 years from now,
circle back. No, 10 years from now. I just don't think it's going to happen. That it's going to be 100%.
How long can I hold on to this job? Can I make it into my 70s?
Yes.
Eh, sure. Why not?
Why not?
Next up in the Fastest 15, down at Highline High School in Burien, they have a spirit rock. It's been there for 20 years. A huge boulder was donated. They set it in place in front of the school, and kids would paint it. The senior class would paint it. and they are now removing the Spirit Rock from Highline High School because a couple of kids have been morons and have painted what they said is hateful graffiti on it. And so Channel 4, ComoNews.com covered this.
Call it a bizarre school mascot, an odd addition to the century-old architecture behind me. But to kids here at Highline High School, this Spirit Rock means something. Unfortunately for taggers, it's also a place for hate speech. For nearly 20 years, the Spirit Rock has loomed in front of Burien's Highline High School. Large and lopsided, it was a place to write slogans to cheer on sports teams, a place to issue well wishes for graduating classes, a place to share positive messages. But twice over the last week, it's been hit by taggers. A student says there was a swastika, even an offensive saying about the LGBTQ community.
Okay, so two people have tagged it, and now they're removing the rock that's been a 20-year tradition.
And you know what they did after they tagged it? Somebody came out and covered it with black paint, and then the kids came and put good stuff on it.
Yeah, they painted over.
But we have to remove this rock.
It's so dumb. It's just so stupid.
That's crazy.
You can write, I mean, sadly, you can put hate in other places.
Exactly.
Just because it shows up on this rock, the rock has to be removed.
Yeah. It's been a 20-year tradition.
Obnoxious. If the school students aren't upset, we're upset for you.
Yeah, two morons paint ugly stuff
on it.
Might
just be one. Like, why don't you just figure out who the one person is?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Save the Spirit Rock at Highline. That is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
And we're going to do something really fun. Broadcasting legend, Pat O'Day. He's dropping by for a visit. Next.
KJR, serving the Pacific Northwest from Seattle.
Patrick O'Day!
What a day I had yesterday. You know, it's Boeing's 50th anniversary. Happy birthday, Big B. They put on an air show for the families of the employees at the Renton Airport. And you say, why were you there, Pat? I may end up there someday. Anyway, took the boat down, sat on the lake. I hope you had a chance to see it. 50th anniversary, and they brought out some of their original old airplanes. They had the 247, which was their very first passenger
plane. Oh, I wish I could listen to the whole story, but I want to talk to the man live. So a few weeks ago, Pat O'Day was in the radio station here, and Pat's become a treasured, cherished friend of mine, and I said, why don't we get you back on the radio show? And he said, well, I'll be in town on Friday. And so let me welcome to the studio the legendary broadcaster, Pat O'Day.
I got something to say initially.
What do you have to say initially?
Dory, you are all Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
You have Seattle Ballard pure DNA,
right?
Unspoiled genes by semesters and over at Washington State. Yeah, you're pure Seattle, and you have the credentials to re-guide our city back to somewhere in the vicinity of the main line.
Okay, that's my goal every single
day.
You
got the creds.
When
just
I come
keep
on
it
the
up.
Air. Well, I got to tell you, Pat, you've been on the show. It's been several years since I've had you on the show, but radio changed my life. You know, when I was growing up, I fell in love with talk radio when I was about 16, 17 years old. And then, of course, I became very aware of your role in Seattle broadcasting history. And I say with absolute confidence that when we do that Mount Rushmore of all-time Seattle broadcasters, you, Dave Niehaus. I don't know who the other two are, but I know that you and Dave Niehaus are one and two.
Whether I'm there or not.
You are.
A guy named Leo Lassen.
The old
Seattle Rainiers.
Yeah.
He could paint pictures via a microphone that he had Mount Rainier wood just so gorgeous in that Mount Rainier. When the stadium was out of Six Seattle Stadium on Rainier Avenue, everything. He'd have the smell of the guitar smoke. of the cigar smoke in your nose, you know.
Right.
He has to be on that Mount Rushmore if you want to go all the way back.
Okay.
And Niehaus, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, in case people don't know about your background, so you were on the air for how many years here?
I went on the air in Seattle in 1958.
Okay.
And I was on the air full-time until 1968, when I became general manager of KJR and KISW. And then I would just fill in vacation reliefs and so on. Then I went back on briefly. I owned a station for a while called KYYX.
I remember it
and
well.
And I did the morning show there for a while until we sold that station. But my number one love in life is being on the... Well, I was 8 years old. My dad was a preacher,
mm-hmm.
and he had a program on KMO Tacoma.
Okay.
Every morning, right after Glenn Hardy's Mutual Network News at 9 o'clock, he had a 9:15 show called Revival Echoes. And he would go to the station every time I got a chance, I went to the station with him. You know, I was 8, 9 years old. But was I thinking about being a preacher? No. I was thinking about being an announcer.
Right.
Play-by-play sports, you know, and doing the news.
That's what I was going to do. I wanted to, I mean, and I'll tell you when the seed was planted for me. You mentioned Six Stadium. The 1 year the Pilots were here, 1969, I was 7 years old, and I had built this treehouse. And I would string a radio on extension cord into this treehouse, and I'd have pillows and quilts, and I got a scorebook. And I would keep score of every Pilots game.
Wow.
And you know, 7 years old, but it was magic. It was magic for me to, because my world was, didn't have a lot of possibility at the time, it seemed.
Right.
And radio just opened up the whole world.
Do you know a funny thought when you tell me that? I was sitting there along the third baseline at the Pilots games, not realizing that a great future radio star was over in Ballard, only 7 years old, listening on the radio.
You were sitting right next to Tommy Harper. He was playing third base
right.
on that Pilots game.
Do you know what the last show, last performance of any kind was at Six Seattle Stadium? I put Jimi Hendrix there.
Okay, well, let's get right into that then, because he was the first guy that signed with you?
Yeah, he and Three Dog Night.
Okay.
It kind of happened at about the same time. And
we should explain real quickly. You, along with being an on-air guy, you became a concert promoter and brought a lot of world-class acts to town.
Very quickly. It started... Radio paid so poorly in those days in small markets.
Right.
I started in Astoria, then to Longview, then to Yakima, then to Seattle. And I was only getting like $2,350 a month, and I got two kids, you know.
Right.
So I start running teenage dances. See, Dick Clark had American Bandstand.
Right.
So I said, okay, I'm going to run dances, and I'll charge $1 to come in, you know. And I would get the local new starting up rock and roll bands. And that led to the dance circuit that I created here in the Northwest, Spanish Castle, Parker's, Lake Hills, Roller Rink, so on. And then that led me into the concert business when in 62 I put on the World's Fair opening twist party at
right.
the Orpheum, the old Orpheum. And then I started running concerts in the Opera House.
How old were you in 62? I mean, you must have just been a kid.
I was 28.
I mean, that's quite an entrepreneurial spirit for a 28-year-old kid.
Yeah, the thing is, you just don't know that you can't do it, so
right.
you go ahead and do it.
Right, right.
So anyway, then Opera House concerts, I could run them. I ran the Spring Spectacular, Summer, Winter, Fall Spectacular, and I could get all the acts because there was no concert business. I had one show that had the Four Seasons, the Beach Boys, Roy Orbison, Brenda Lee, and Little Stevie Wonder all on the same show.
On the same card?
On the same show. We ran the show three times, noon, 4 o'clock, and 8 p.m. in the opera. Then we brought the Beatles to town because the Washington State Pavilion had been converted to the Coliseum.
Right, right.
The Beatles came to town, sold out instantly, And I said, oh, boy, we have got. So now the next I bring in the Stones and the Mamas and Papas and the Righteous Brothers and Gary Lewis and the Player, so on.
And you had some personal interactions with the Beatles, too, right?
Oh, totally.
I mean,
totally,
tell me the most memorable interaction with them.
Well, I kind of got in deep doo-doo with Paul McCartney because somebody came to the radio station one day and said it was very critical they talked to me, very critical. So I went down to the coffee shop and sat down with a young lady who worked for an answering service here in Seattle. Do you remember when there were answering services? She worked for an answering service. And she says, I have information, she says, to give you. She says, I'm not supposed to do this. I'll get fired if you tell anybody. But Paul McCartney is going to marry Jane Asher when the Beatles are in Seattle. Paul loves Seattle, and he's going to marry Jane. I said, oh, give me a break. What? She said, well, look what I've got. And she had this giant manila envelope filled with information. And I mean, we're talking about the letters to copies of the letters to the British consulate here, getting someone to conduct the ceremony. We're talking about the reservation for the Spanish ballroom at the Olympic Hotel. We're talking about the tuxedos have been rented. We're talking about everything. And said that it's going to happen following the show. And I said, oh, gosh. And then further, she was able to come forward with reservations for Jane Asher's mother on Northwest Airlines.
Okay.
What was happening was that that their manager, he was conducting all of this through the answering service here in town. Chuck Boland was my newsman.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Chuck, look what's going on. Would you check this out? Keep it to yourself, but check this out. And Chuck went and checked through it all. And he said, Pat, he says, how can you, there's no hole in this. It's complete. And I said, okay. So I made an important announcement that morning. We're a news source, too, you understand.
Right.
And Chuck said, we have solid information that Paul McCartney will marry Jane Asher while the Beatles are here in Seattle. And out of respect for the couple, the details of the wedding, which we have in full, but will be kept quiet.
Right.
And so just know this is a warm moment for them. And, well, we have got reporters flying from Los Angeles. It's going nuts, right? Now we are at the press conference that afternoon. Now, I knew the guys from their previous show, right? And they, of course, know who I was.
Mm.
And McCartney looks at me and said, what in the hell is going on? And I just, like, I spread my hands out. I said, Paul, we got this information. And so the first thing question was, Paul, are you marrying Jane Asher tonight? And Paul says, ask Pat, you know. And I'm just, oh, God.
Did the wedding happen?
No. No, it didn't happen. So after the show, I go down to the Olympic Hotel where there is a giant wedding cake sitting on the table in the Spanish ballroom. And they tell me that at the last minute, there'd been a cancellation.
Wow.
Right? I don't know what's happened until it's almost Thanksgiving. And I'm invited out to Sigma Chi for a celebration of Sigma Chi's awards they're giving for the year. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I go out, I'm to MC it. So I'm MCing it, and they're giving out these awards. And finally, this national guy gets up, and he gives the Stupid Turkey Award to Pat O'Day. Because Pat was ensnarled by a scheme put together by the guys out at the frat. They had sent one of their mates to London who had lived there. He set up the phone number for Brian Epstein, conducted the whole thing out of London through the answering service. They had run car washes to create money so they could buy and send deposits.
So you were the victim of an elaborate fraternity hoax. Wow.
You talk about being a victim. It's like, oh, my God.
We're talking with Pat O'Day, the legend, and we've got much more to do. So stick around, and our conversation with Pat will continue in just a moment as the Dory Monson Show rolls on. Goodbye. Pat O'Day, the legendary broadcaster.
You know, Dory.
Came in for a visit today.
Yeah, well, there's a little problem, you know.
What's the problem?
Well, my wife says when I open the refrigerator door and the light goes on, I do about 40 minutes. I don't know that we're going to have enough time today to.
Yeah, well,
I'm kidding.
You can welcome back anytime.
I don't want to take much away from your great show.
No, it's very nice coming from you.
You may have read, there's an article in the paper recently where I labeled you as number one, the most important broadcaster on the air in Seattle right now.
Yeah, I did see that, and that was very nice. That meant a lot to me.
Well, it's important to create balance in our community, because we are out of balance right now.
Yeah, well, you've seen a lot of evolution.
Well, you look at the Seattle City Council, if that's just wacko, you know.
Yeah.
It all started, by the way, Seattle had a leftist tilt. Mm-hmm. Way back in the early 30s.
Right.
The University of Washington was kind of a hotbed of communist theory, if you will.
Yes.
My great uncle was a law professor out there, and he was also the vice president of the Society for Preservation of Greek Sailors, which was a communist front organization.
Yeah? Oh, really?
I didn't know that till later on when I was going through an FBI check, and they said, did you know your great-uncle was a communist?
Wow.
I said, what? Anyway, then the University of Washington leveled out after World War II because of our rift with Russia.
Right.
But then it has slid, not Russia communist direction, but it has slid leftward.
Oh, yeah.
More and more and more.
Yeah.
And,
it's been dramatic.
And we need balance in our community.
Well,
it all started, the 78's a critical year. You had mentioned that to me once. But 68, when I was on the air, was the real pivot point. When you had students sitting on I-5 blocking traffic, protesting Kent State and the Vietnam War.
Right.
And things began to dramatically swing to the crazy side,
mm-hmm.
and then those people, by the way,
right.
Those students that were sitting on their ass that day on I-5 are now our professors,
right.
And
right.
Our instructors.
And they never left campus. They never got a taste of the real world.
No, they didn't.
Yeah, they just stay in this bubble of academia where you just have a bunch of people affirming anything you say, no matter how ridiculous it is.
Yeah, now I'm sure I'm getting in trouble saying these things with some people.
You're saying it on my show.
Hey, I love Seattle. Is that I've got my creds for that.
Yeah.
I love the people of Seattle, but I do worry that we are just out there in la-la land.
Yeah.
When it comes to the fundamentals of life. I suggest that you get your kids, if you want your kids to be balanced, I suggest you get them to church, get them to Sunday school. It's a slowly evaporating habit.
Yes.
And it's got to be reversed, because therein is the balance and therein is
I agree.
It's tough for parents.
And then plop those kids in front of the radio from noon to 3, and I'll straighten them out, too.
That's a good idea.
There you go.
97.3. I think that's a good spot for them, isn't
it? Well, we're almost out of time here. We're telling me off the air, you got a little raspy voice there.
Well, I smoked for 60 years.
Oh.
I quit drinking 35 years ago.
Yeah.
But I smoked like an idiot. And so I have some lesions on my vocal cord. Now, that's the bad news. The good news is there's a doctor at Swedish that with a laser slowly can remove those lesions.
Oh, good.
Taking a couple of them off, and I got to go see him again.
Okay.
So I sound kind of hoarse.
Yeah.
But
you sound great.
Well.
You sound like Seattle. I mean, sir, I'm serious, Pat.
Well, I guess I love people still tell me, they say, why aren't you doing the hydroplane races?
Yeah.
Which brings up another subject we talk about, how that sport is shooting itself in the foot.
Yeah, well, you were synonymous with the high. Well, we're going to have to do that another time. So, like you said, we didn't have enough time for 1/1000th of the things I'd love to talk with you about, so come back anytime.
Well, no, I treasure you, and I like what your station is doing, and you are maintaining the importance of radio as the music stations let it slip into oblivion.
I really appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Okay, maybe I'll climb up on Mount Rushmore with you someday.
Mount Rainier.
Or Rainier.
Rainier's looking down right now today saying, hey, Jay, look, I'm covered with ice. I'm covered with snow. There's no problem.
I don't know. I think Leo Lassen painted the picture better than you. I'm covered with snow. It's the Great Pat O'Day. Dropping by for a visit. Really love you coming by, Pat. And I really appreciate you being on with me today.
Thanks, Dory.
All right. Pat O'Day joining us. And we have lots more. The Big Lead at 2 is coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show.